Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. Before we get started on this week's episode of Pod Yourself The Wire, I just have a quick little announcement. For those of you in Los Angeles, March 16th, that's a week from today, if you are listening to this today, March 16th, 2023, at 8 p.m., there's going to be a stand-up comedy show that I produce along with some other comedians over at the Silver Lake Independent JCC. It's a show called Michigas. Basically, it is a crowd work show. The stand-up comedians go on stage, and we talk to the audience about whatever their problems are, and we try to work through those problems with them in a funny way. It's a lot of fun. People often come to the show and talk about their shitty roommates, or they talk about, you know, some guy they like or some girl they like, and then the comedian is on stage and kind of riffing with them. Super fun show. I would love for anyone in Los Angeles to come to this show. We do it every month over at the Silver Lake Independent JCC. So if you would like to go to this stand-up comedy show March 16th at 8 p.m., please go to sijcc.net and buy your tickets now. You can see it in the calendar. Just click calendar and you'll find it there. Once again, that's sijcc.net. Also, we'll put a link to get your tickets in the show notes in the description of this episode. Buy tickets to Michigas on March 16th at 8 p.m. Going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you out there, Los Angeles.
Podcast.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself The Wire. The Wire podcast, where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire and talk about it. Thank you once again for listening to the world's only The Wire podcast. Don't go searching for any others because they don't exist. They are lies. Just real quick, obviously 5 stars in review, you know the drill. But also, did you know that there are 2 Pod Yourself subreddits?
One for the gun and one for the wire.
One for the wire and one for the gun. So please subscribe to Pod Yourself a Gun or Pod Yourself the Wire on Reddit. It's a subreddit, which Reddit is a website in which I think it's whites only. As far as I can tell,
there's not like a Dom Reddit that we could be on.
What's a Dom Reddit? Like a I get it. Sub
yeah, you got
Dom
it. You
Reddit.
Got it. It's good.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was doing a great whites only joke about the fact.
Sorry, no, it was a very important interruption.
That Reddit is a very white place. But no, it's everyone's invited, of course. It is our fan Tanglefisk set it up, and I wanted to shout him out because you know what. Thank you for creating those subreddits for us. So yeah, join our Pod Yourself a Gun or our Pod Yourself the Wire. Yeah, so do that. Thank you. All right. Today, Vince and I are going to be talking about from season 2 of The Wire, episode 9, Stray Rounds. And our guest today, you know him from his wonderful podcast, The Dopey Podcast. And you've heard him right now here on Pod Yourself The Wire. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is Dave Manheim.
Thank you, Matt. I'm honored to be here.
I'm stoked that you're here, man. I'll tell you. I know of your podcast because I heard it on NPR. I heard on This American Life.
What?
And yeah. It was an episode. It was about recovery. So it is a recovery-based podcast, right? In some sense.
Well, the idea is it's on drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. But yeah. Addiction and dumb shit both have recovery in them. So yes,
that's
a little
true.
Recovery in it. Yes.
Nice. Yeah. So you are a sober person.
I am a sober person. 100% sober.
Hell yeah. Samesies. Samesies. Nice. Fuck yeah. So I have
I'm
to
not,
imagine.
But I respect that about you both.
I don't believe you.
Thank you, Vince.
He's lying. He doesn't respect it.
I do.
He doesn't respect
Vince,
shit.
I think it. Vince, do you respect it or do you not respect it?
No, I do respect it. I've never even met Drug Matt, so I have no choice but to respect it.
You wouldn't have liked Drug Matt. You think you would have because,
I've never
you
seen
know,
that.
No, yeah, I guess you would never, you would have hated me. I would have yelled at you. Yeah.
Matt, did you get high watching The Wire originally?
I did. It was actually, I was very high and it was like, I was right in the middle of like, this was like, I was bottoming out. I think it was a rewatch when I started bottoming out. This is like the second time I watched The Wire. I was close to the end and I was so high that I was like, maybe I should be a cop. because I was like, it seems like cops have like access to a lot of drugs, you know?
What were you using when you watched The Wire?
I was an opiate addict. So I was at the time, it was like heroin, but then it was also Dilaudid. I started getting really into Dilaudid around then. So I really related to Bubbles nodding out. I was like, yeah, I do that. It's pretty sick.
When I found The Wire, I was deep on heroin in Los Angeles. And nice. I couldn't imagine a more perfect show to watch. And I would watch The Wire deep on heroin. I would watch The Wire kicking heroin. I would watch The Wire relapsing on heroin.
Nice.
And then I watched it again, sober, euphoric recalling, watching The Wire high on heroin.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of nice to like rewatch and be like, oh, yeah, why do I feel high in this moment?
Yeah, this somehow makes me feel high for some reason.
I remember early in recovery when I would watch it, because I rewatch this show a lot, and I remember early in recovery at one point I had to stop watching it because it's one of the few shows that does a really accurate depiction of people being high. Like,
yes.
Like the scenes with like Bubbles and Johnny Weeks, like just getting high and having these like slow, inane conversations about what they're going to do. It was too real. It was almost like triggering. So I was just like, this is probably not good. I should probably not do this. But you know, I still watched it. And you know what? 13 years sober still. So. Take that, Bubbles.
Take that, Bubbles and Johnny Weeks.
You need applause on your soundboard. You got a soundboard and you don't even have like the most obvious necessary.
How's that?
Yeah, all right. Well, okay.
You hear that?
No, play it again. No, we can't hear it.
You don't hear it?
No.
That's so fucking annoying. fucking roadcaster so fucking annoying, right? It's so beautiful and yet so ugly at the same time.
I have the Podtrac P8. It's like the road, it's like the roadcaster, but it is also this big annoying machine that is not really a mixer. It just looks like one. But okay, The Wire. So you like The Wire, is that right?
I love The Wire.
Sick. All right.
I felt like a leading question.
I usually just ask, do you like The Wire? But this time I wanted to lead, just in case you were like, no, I hate it. I came on here to tell you guys to stop, which is could be possible. So do you have like a favorite season of The Wire?
Well, I mean, I just have a favorite, an unfavorite season. Which Ooh. Is season 5. I hate season 5. The Wire would be a perfect show. It would be the greatest show, bar none, if season 5 didn't exist. Yet they made season 5, making it not a perfect show, making it a toss-up for what the greatest show ever made was. And I don't have the answer because of season 5. Lots of people, though. Like, I talk about The Wire on Dopey all the time.
Yeah.
And lots of people fucking hate season 2.
Yes.
But I love I love season 2. I love it.
I love season 2 and season 5.
Yeah.
You like season How can you like season 5?
It's great. It's great.
It's not good.
Oh, I love it.
McNulty he would never do that. McNulty would never do that in a million years.
I don't like it for McNulty. I mean McNulty was spiraling. I don't know. I liked it. I liked all the journalism stuff. I love the plagiarizing journalism guy and the Dickensian aspect. I love that.
I
like the Dickensian aspect, but McNulty would never set up dead bodies. He would never create a serial killer. He would never do that.
If he's drunk enough, Dave, you don't know what he would do. He's capable of some madness. Let's be real about who Jimmy McNulty is. Other than being just like a drunken Irish fuckboy scoundrel, he's also like a deeply, deeply disturbed half sociopath in that, like, the way he treats people. Like, whenever someone is so quick to discard other people's, like, views or feelings about things, I'm always like, there's a little bit of sociopathy in you, just like a little bit. And he's also someone who is so obsessed with being smarter than everybody that I could totally see him just creating a serial killer just so that he could do what he ends up doing in the fifth season, which is well, we'll get into that in the fifth season, but he's got a plan, and it's a fucked up one, and it's a plan made out of pure spite.
I'm going to say this really quickly, okay? And like, I appreciate what you just said, especially your use of the word sociopathy, and I appreciate Vince's use of the word Dickensian, and I appreciate all this stuff. It's just this. It's like we all have a barometer in ourselves, right? Mm. And I was in The Wire. Like I said to Matt before we started recording, I literally take vacations to Baltimore in the 90s, you know, mentally all the time because I live there in my head watching it. And season 5, it just rang untrue. And I spent so many hours in seasons 1 through 4 over and over and over that I can't even watch season 5 through. I think I've watched seasons 1 through 4 15, 17 times. I think I've watched season 5 twice.
Mm. Well, my favorite season is season 4.
Really?
Yeah, because like, you know, what are these kids doing here?
The kids.
You know?
Totally kidding.
I should hate that season because, like, I am on the record as like hating child actors and saying that they should be banned as a concept. But The Wire found like the rare child actors who aren't just super annoying, probably because they didn't come through the Disney annoying child making machine.
Yeah, they hadn't been molested yet.
Yeah,
so it's like I think it matters a lot where you get your child actors from. If you get them from the Disney machine,
they come pre-molested.
Wow, I love season 4, and and season 3 is like the greatest open air market. But season 2, I love Frank Sobotka. Mm. I love that character. I love Nikki Sobotka, and I love Ziggy.
Mm.
You know, I also love the introduction of Brother Musain, which happens in this episode.
That's right.
And I love the brother Muson Omar situation. And oh, I told you also this, I'm so upset that I picked episode 9 because I could have picked the brother Muson Omar confrontation. See, that was a big mistake.
Brother Muson is my McNulty becoming a serial killer, because like to me he's like a Fargo villain that escaped into The Wire. Like, you know that show Fargo always has like these corny ass like Michael Bay villains, like the two twins who never talk. That's the way I feel about Brother Muson. Like, he's like really buttoned up, he's like a brother Nation of Islam guy, but also he kills people. And you're like, okay,
he's a killer.
This feels like a very a TV writer wrote this.
It does.
Character.
It is. There is part of me that goes like, I can suspend disbelief for one Omar. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like Omar is a guy who can walk around in public and just like, you know, even though he's the guy who's robbing everyone, people are just too afraid to
whistle his own theme song and talk in catchphrases. It's cool when Omar does it. Like, no doubt.
Right, but then another guy shows up who's like, that guy's impossible to kill. And it's like, what? There can't be two of them.
Yeah.
Well, no, but Brother Muson lives in New York and Omar lives in Baltimore. And I love Brother Muson's little sidekick. Lamar, is that his name? I love that. Lamar, where's my Atlantic Weekly? Lamar,
he's like, where's my Harper's Bazaar?
Yeah, where's my Harper's Bazaar? And Lamar is like his valet, like the old Mars Day and the Time with Jerome. Like Lamar is his little guy. I love that. And I love how Lamar's disgusted at Omar's homosexuality, but Brother Muson is okay with it, even though he's a Nation of Islam member.
Yeah. There's a lot going on with the stick up boy hitman scene on the East Coast. A lot of characters,
for sure.
A lot of crazy guys.
Yeah, they get a little
I appreciate though, Vince, I appreciate what you're saying. I never even considered hating on Brother Muson, but I think I was won over high on heroin, so I just went with it.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, you might be right with this.
I think part of it is the actor, he's doing a sort of one note thing with Brother Muson. Like he's doing like,
sure,
I'm keeping my face in a very like affected neutral position this whole time. I don't know. Whereas like I can buy Omar just because Michael K. Williams is so damn good the whole time.
Well, we can get into all of that in the future of this very podcast. But of course, we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you pod to the garden, you got a
pod.
Oh, man. Well, I beg your
pod.
Walk the straight
podcast.
Track. If you
pod
with Jesus. He's gonna save
the docks.
You gotta keep the
Polish pod
down in the hole.
Season 2.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today, once again, we're talking about from season 2 of The Wire, episode 9, Stray Rounds, which premiered August 3rd, 2003. I forgot to write a synopsis. Vince, off the top of your head.
About that. Yeah, go ahead.
Off the top of your head, what say a synopsis for this episode.
Ziggy gets in too deep with a duck problems while boys fight over the corner and a young boy brings heat onto the street.
Wow, that was
terrible.
That was actually pretty good.
It was pretty terrible, but I appreciate that you
in too deep in a duck problem is
I was trying to go for a pun there and it didn't come off, but we can workshop
it. Was there a pun attempt? Yeah. So I guess for you it didn't work, for me it just seemed correct.
You want to hear the IMDb synopsis real quick?
Please
read it. Can you do it real quick? Is it possible?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely. Ziggy pulls Johnny 50 into a new caper that makes the Greeks pay big money. McNulty goes undercover in a brothel as Valchek fumes over the change of targets and Burrell pulls the rug from beneath him. Daniels and Perlman maintain their composure.
Wow.
That's they it. Actually, usually they're like an entire paragraph long. And so eventually we just had to write our own because I was like, this is not possible.
Like two characters maintaining their composure is not necessarily a line that I would have put in the synopsis.
Yeah, they could have lost the composure line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do like the shout out to Johnny 50 in there, because he's a character that not everyone necessarily knows the name of.
Yeah.
And I think he's a great guy. Mm. And he also shows up in season 5. But we'll talk about that.
Homeless.
Yeah, homeless.
Hold up. I want to say one thing before you say anything else.
Please.
Which is that your theme song is super solid. That's a super solid theme song.
Thank you. Thank you. That is,
I really like it.
It was written and recorded by me. That's me doing the whole thing.
It's great.
And then some guy sang pod and Polish. Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. As we always say, we cannot evaluate any piece of art divorced from its cultural context. We got to put of that context back in. And we do that with a little thing that we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day machine tells the tale, son.
That's right. We're going. I got all my stories from the New York Post this week. We're going all the way
wonderful.
Back to August 3rd, 2003. A lot of things going on as written about by the Post, America's id.
Especially in 2003 Post, it is America's id like a motherfucker.
Headline, I'm still here. Roseanne jumps on the reality bandwagon. Can it take the weight?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
There's a subtle joke they
did
there.
Shots fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it was only a matter of time until reality TV crossed paths with Roseanne, or vice versa. The result is The Real Roseanne Show, in which the former sitcom star, talk show host, and self-proclaimed domestic goddess is followed around by camera crews as she develops, pitches, and then produces her own TV cooking show called, you guessed it, Domestic Goddess.
You know what's crazy? This is 2003. So Roseanne has been screaming, I'm still here, for 20 years.
Yeah.
At least.
Well, she you know how Oprah gets like thin and fat again? Like Roseanne does that,
sure.
But like with getting canceled. Like she gets canceled and then she's back again. And then
she's
canceled
back
again.
And then she's canceled, yeah. And she's back. Yeah.
It's her thing.
She's resilient.
Yeah,
she is. Yeah, you know, come what may, she will still be here to accidentally call someone a slur she didn't know was a slur.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is how the Post chose to report on the deaths of Uday and Qusay Hussein, which happened this week in 2003. Butcher's bad boys buried as another GI is slain.
They love alliteration.
Yeah.
There's just something about that. They're just like, all right, how are we doing? Butcher bad boy Barry. The alliteration's got to be like the most dumb guy, like poetic thing you can do, where it's just like, it's like,
hey,
just
don't talk
for
about
dumb
Sean Penn like that, please.
Wow.
If you've ever read Sean Penn's novel, there's a lot of alliteration going on.
He loves alliteration.
He does.
And you know who doesn't?
But alliteration is one of those sparkly things about the Post. Box office boffo back or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
it's an old newspaper thing. I don't hate it. Keep going. I'm sorry.
I don't hate it either. It's, you know, and as you know, I've never written like a lot of super dry journalism, but it is one of those things that journalists can do to like keep themselves entertained while writing really boring shit.
Keep you from killing yourself is probably like half the job of alliteration.
Yeah. speaking of creative headlines, audiences no.go to j.lo stinker.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. The critics have been holding their noses and running for cover from Geely, the new Jennifer Lopez Ben Affleck vehicle. And it looks like audiences are hearing their pain. On Friday, when it was unleashed, the overhyped flop ranked just 7th in attendance, according to unofficial preliminary estimates by Box Office Mojo. The super stinker fell behind movies like Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, which has been out almost a month, and Bad Boys 2, released 2 weeks ago.
That's crazy. I thought Geely was like a 1998 movie.
No.
It was 2003.
It might as well. It's the same thing, though. 98 to 2003 were very similar. Times.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But that is fucking, that's crazy. So this is, I mean, this is a historical event.
The bombing.
Geely coming out and bombing and everyone just like, Oh God! Duncan. Everyone was just—they were drooling. Their mouths were just open. Just yes, we will destroy them. It was great. We were all mad at both of them. We—I don't even know why I was mad. I was just
but love.
Fuck you.
Love found a way 20 years later.
I know.
That's the most beautiful piece of the headline.
My man cannot resist a famous person named Jennifer. It's just like he can't. He goes away and he comes back.
Yeah. God bless
them. I think
them.
Geely 2 is about to come out. And maybe that'll be the end of their marriage. That would be incredible.
Dude.
Is it called Geely's?
Yeah, Geely's. With the S in parentheses like aliens.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Sorry, I was just saying Jennifer Garner on Party Down. She's looking very cute, I gotta say.
Yeah. Okay. Sick.
And finally, I finished this one up with another banger from our old friend Linda Stasi, because she just has like a singular style that I've come to know and love since I've been doing the Back in the Day machine. Mm-hmm. And you know, every when she writes a truly unhinged column about God knows what, like I feel like I just have to include it. Last week we had a Stasi piece about George W. Bush watching elephants fuck. This one is entitled Pentagon Dumb. You can bet on it. I swear I will never say never again, and I'll give you 50-1 that I keep my word. 2 years ago, I said that the Pentagon would never be able to top the idiocy of their contest to get us regular people to submit ideas for developing countermeasures to weapons of mass destruction. It is pretty wild that they did that, let's be honest.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Immediately realizing how scary it was that they didn't know how to stop a nuke or a germ, I submitted the surefire winning answer. Send in 100 women with PMS to harangue terrorists to death.
This is so the post 2003.
Those are jokes you could do in 2003.
Yeah, get a bunch of bleeding women and nag them to death. That'll do it. And the Taliban will just go, oh, my ears, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. The rest of the piece is about them hiring John Poindexter, who is apparently involved in Iran Contra. It doesn't matter. I wanted to get to the PMS joke.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah,
it's another reason that this time machine is so poignant, because mm-hmm. the Post could never get away with anything like that now. It's amazing.
Yeah. Never. Yeah. They're so PC now.
Now it's just like more like the new woke Post.
Yeah.
So dumb. So it was, that's what was going on.
Yeah, I could read the rest of that article, but I don't think you need to hear about John Poindexter. Yeah.
The PMS joke was the most worth it for me, especially given that, I don't think that strategy would work. Mm. I'll say that right now.
It could. Not How do you know? We never tried it.
Yeah, well.
It's like when Santangelo goes to consult the psychic. Like, there's got to be a Santangelo in the CIA who's like, have we tried women with PMS yet?
It works accidentally.
Send them to Fallujah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what was happening at the time. Real quick, this week's Balmer B story is, I haven't done it yet, but I think it's going to be based on to the tune of Sister Christian. Mm. So it's Jimmy McNulty, oh, the time has come, and you know that you want more than one. Okay, let's play. It's only fair because your wife left you. You answered your own question. What the fuck did I do? You did too. You're motorboating. What's your price for flight? You're pretending to fight. You'll be spot on tonight. Anyways, I'll probably record that the end of the. Thank you.
This is where the sound effect. Okay.
All right. Vince, I will get an applause, and I will just give myself applause.
Thank you.
The entire time. Okay. So let's talk about this episode. General thoughts, Vince. What did you think of this episode?
Again, I think it's a great episode. It starts in a very police procedural kind of way. I feel like there was a lot of innocent children getting caught in the gang crossfires in the late 90s. But then they do something interesting with it and turn it into like a real story about how things actually work between the cops and the drug organizations. Great episode. A lot of teases for next season with Bunny Cole and
Colvin.
Bunny Colvin. And Brother Muzon, who I didn't like, but I loved the introduction. I loved the buildup for Brother Muzon.
Yeah. Dave, what did you think of this episode?
Well, I liked it. Like I said before, I wish I had picked like next episode or the episode after, because that's when like the juice really starts flowing. But I liked seeing Bunny Colvin also. I like seeing Bunny Colvin and Walsh kind of sizing each other up after the killing, and you know that they're like, I like all those interpersonal things in The Wire. We're seeing how people relate. I like that Stringer got pissed at Bodie. I love Stringer and Bodie. I love Bodie, man. I love Bodie because he also was basically the same character on Oz. He would like do the same spitting and the same kind of stuff. I love Stringer Bell, Stringer and Proposition Joe, them together. There's so many things, but my favorite part of this episode, I appreciate the motorboating song and the whores were, you know, very voluptuous. Yeah. And I think it was, it was in this episode or was it in the one before that Jimmy fucks the waitress?
In the one before.
That was the cold open to last episode.
Yeah.
I loved the Jimmy fucking the waitress. I watched them both stupidly before this podcast. But the thing I loved is when Proposition Joe is talking to Stringer Bell about Charlie Salas.
And you
get into that sort of old time heroin dealing Baltimore criminality. And also it reminds me of heroin, like good heroin, which always feels good for me to hear about.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, you buy for five, sell for 10.
Yeah.
You know, I like all that kind of stuff.
You West Side. You must have heard of Charlie Salas, right?
Yeah.
Sold heroin like it was water. I mean, the motherfucker made himself some money.
I don't know who the fuck you talking about.
I know you don't. And the police don't. And the stick-up boys wouldn't have a fucking clue either. Because Charlie Salas just sold dope. No profile, no street rep. Just buy for a dollar, sell for two. Avon a soldier.
You still got that connect?
Right off the bowstring.
I love that scene because, you know, it has multiple reads to it, which is like one way you could read it is that Prop Joe is like giving good advice. And the other read is that he's giving very self-serving advice, because I think this whole storyline is Stringer Bell as sort of like the too naive politico who like goes to Washington thinking that he can like change things and then finding out that it actually is just about power and cutting corners and
And violence.
He's going in thinking it's about one thing, but it's not. It's about the one thing that it's always about.
Well, the thing about Proposition Joe though is he's a student of history, and he's also showing Stringer that Stringer is not a student of history. Stringer is a student of business. He wants to be a CEO. That's all he can't shut up about. How CEOs do this and do that, and Prop
he's
Joe's
a student
like,
of a guy at a community college.
Yes, but Prop Joe is like, "Have you ever heard of this guy?" And Stringer Bell's like, "No." And Prop Joe's like, "I knew you never heard of him."
Yeah,
I think I love Proposition Joe, man. Joe is one of my all time faves, and his connection to the Greeks community is like some of the best Wire stuff ever.
Yeah. I do love that. Like this whole time while we're dealing with Avon and Stringer trying to find a new connection because their connection to New York, you know, dried up at the end of last season, at the beginning of this season. And now they're like getting this crap from Atlanta. It's not Raw and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Prop Joe is sitting pretty with the Greek and is just like getting pure right off the boat heroin and coke, and it's just I love it because that is the type of person that like the Greek would deal with. It was like, you're a fat wise man who fix a clock. I like.
I mean, that's a thing that I like about The Wire, like in miniature, because like that old Salt character who gives like sage advice is sort of like a TV staple and like a fiction sure. staple. But I think in The Wire, they add an element of, he might not be an old sage who's giving you advice. He might just be like a Machiavellian guy who is looking out for number one, which is why he has been in the yes. game for so long.
That's, I was going to say, I agree with your take there completely, given what, I mean, what happens later on, but also given the position that Prop Joe is in. Like, Prop Joe is really good at seeing that, like, Stringer's weakness is that he wants to be a business guy. He wants to be the CEO of WorldCom or whatever, you know? And he is like, yeah, I can probably convince this guy, just like you, a politician would convince like a someone, you know, man, I just, I agree, man. Shit needs to be fair. Mm-hmm. You know, shit needs to, you know, we need to all have healthcare or whatever. And then turn around and just like nix every possible bill that would give anyone a little bit of help. It's like Prop Joe is there going, yeah, I agree. There shouldn't be violence, man, because the violence brings, you know, the bodies, and the bodies brings the police. Yeah. But he's doing that, and you know full well that, like, no, Prop Joe he runs the east side of Baltimore's entire dope game. There's a reason for that, and it's because there are bodies, you know? So, like, I think he is low-key manipulating Stringer into giving up territory. I mean, it's a good deal for both of them in some way, but it's mostly a good deal for Prop Joe, because he's now going to get some of their territory, and he's doing it by convincing Stringer to lay his arms down, to be like, no, you know, there should be no guns, there should be no violence, our boys will go there and sell some drugs, and you just tell your boys to sit back.
Bottom line with the whole thing is that Prop Joe knows he never could pull it off if Avon wasn't
yes.
in jail.
Yes.
And if Avon wasn't in jail, Avon would find the New York Connect himself. Mm-hmm. He would fucking take care of it, or he'd go wherever he needs to go
yes.
to get the good heroin. Fucking Stringer isn't willing to make that move. Prop Joe sees the opportunity. Stringer just wants to be able to walk it in, make the money, and he wants to be a businessman.
Yeah.
And so Prop Joe sees that opportunity that when Avon's away, he can claim a little bit of what Avon had built for himself. And
100%.
I think that's the manipulation.
And Stringer yes. Bell is a businessman in the sense that he has an idea and he gives his underlings shitty, unapplicable, like impossible to apply advice, and thinks he's doing, like, he tells Bodhi, like, you need to have some flex. Like, what the fuck does that mean?
You told us about WorldCom and the name change up, right? You said that
I said change the name of our product. I didn't say nothing about taking people off a corner.
Look,
you know, the cops is going to have to bang some heads on this one. That means we got to shut everything down until this shit passed. That means the towers, the low rises, everything got to take a long fucking time out. This here game is more than the rep you carry, the corner you hold. You got to be fierce. I know that. But more than that, you got to show some flex. Give and take on both sides.
I feel like everyone who's ever had a job has had some manager tell them, like, hey, you got to do this thing, but also this thing. And they're completely at odds and impossible to implement. But that middle manager gets to feel like he's doing a good job by like giving you this good advice.
I don't know, though, because in the history of The Wire, you mm-hmm. see like Bodhi in season one beating down the junkie in the yard.
Right.
And D'Angelo's like, no, don't beat down the junkie in the yard because you can make money from him later. And at the end of the episode, Bodhi's telling someone else, no, don't
right.
beat up the junkie in the yard. And I think here, I thought it was interesting when Stringer even says that you got to show flex. I think back in the day when I watched it, I was like, is he talking about flexing or is he talking
yeah.
about flexibility?
Yeah.
And he's talking about flexibility,
right.
but it comes out in such a weird way. But Bodhi, I mean, you have to admit, over the course of the five seasons, Bodhi learns a lot of flexibility. He does.
Yeah, he does. And I think that, like, there is something to be said for, like, you know, good leadership. You know, if D'Angelo was trying to, in one way, teach them, like, hey, why can't we do this and have there be no violence? But there's always, like, and it's good that, like, Bodhi does eventually, like, become more calculated in his, like, when he's going to use violence or when he's going to, like, let something go. And that is an important thing. But it just, it's so anathema to the industry that it kind of bites them in the ass. And I think it's I think it's age. If you live long enough in the dope game, eventually you get a little bit soft, I think, is what ends up happening. And I think Stringer is an example of that. I think Bodhi is an example of that eventually. I think Avon's an example of that. In season three, when we finally meet Marlo, we see what trying to, you know, like, be the king means for a young guy. And it means
it's bodies. It's sort of the story of, you know, capitalism. You get soft as you get further away from the gears that actually, like, grind, you know? So, like, and that's kind of the point of it, is you want to get further away from the actual, like, point of the, like, the predatory work. The exploitation, like, you're trying to insulate yourself from that, so of course you're gonna get a little bit soft.
I do love you were bringing up, you know, his him being this, like, you know, CEO middle manager essentially, who now runs the company while the boss is away. And one of the ways you can tell that that's the case is Stringer insists on having many all hands meetings.
More meetings better. More meetings mean new job.
Exactly. So he keeps being these moments you see that start a scene starts with Stringer just standing and talking while all of his boys are sitting on chairs just going, what is this fucking school? Why are we here? It's so funny. His insistence on, like, let's get everyone together. And that happens more and more in this season and in season three. It's beautiful. I love watching Stringer trying to lead meetings because he thinks more meetings good.
It's like me to give my graphics guy, like, advice on the kind of, like, graphic I want to go with, like, an article. I'm like, can you do this and put these people with this background? And they're like, all right, let me translate this idiotic thing you just said into an actual thing that I can do.
Yeah, but you feel for Stringer in this episode a little bit because, like, so much goes wrong for him. I mean, first we have the, you know, the death of this nine-year-old. Was it a nine-year-old kid? You know, by a stray bullet because of a corner that, you know, Bodhi is taking for really just the reason of, like, you know, prestige. Clout, you know?
He's taking the corner because, like, people are not traveling. Like, it's like if you have a shitty restaurant and someone across town has better food than you, like, of course you're going to want to take over that restaurant and sell your food from it, because you can coast on their market share for a while.
I get why he's doing it, but it's like, you know, this is a
Matt, have you ever been to a junior college business
Yes, supply and demand. I learned that. By the way, Vince, you were just saying about how bad their drugs are. You know your drugs are dog shit when you only get white people who own cars as customers in the hood. Because, like, that, to me, I was like, it was a very small detail, but it opens with this white dude with
sold
a car.
He hasn't even sold that car for drugs yet. Like, you'd...
Yeah, right, exactly. Because, like, the whole point of, like, having the best territory, or the reason it's the best territory, is because they are literally dealing to where the fiends live. Like, this is the pit. These are the Franklin Towers. These are the projects. And so all of the fiends are there. That's why they have the best territory. It's where they're at.
Access.
You know your drugs are shitty when it's like all the fiends are walking 2 miles to get the good shit, and the only customers are white people going, I heard that black people sell drugs here.
WMD, got that WMD here.
Nah, I'm looking for what you had the other day.
Shit right here.
Other day you was calling it Bin Laden.
Yeah, well, now it's WMD. It will mass destruct your ass. So this the high test? Same shit, new name.
He says the whitest thing anyone ever says. He says, I was looking for the high test. Yeah. You have the high test?
Yeah. This is amazing.
Like the most white middle-aged mm-hmm. contractor line. You know, yes. You know that guy's about to go like build a bathroom for somebody and he just got off of Oxycontin and now he's fucking fucked on heroin.
Yes.
And he needs the high test. He's looking yes. for the Bin Laden and yeah. not the will mass destruct or whatever.
Yeah, not the WMD.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that shit was a beautiful little detail, and Bodhi is like, you know, annoyed to have to explain the fact that they keep changing. Yes, like, it's a different label, but it's the same right. good it's, stuff it's in like, quotes. The fact that this guy thinks this is good shit is also hilarious. Well, he's like, oh, you guys got the good shit. It's like, no, you are obviously not about that dope life.
And also like the entire purpose of changing the name was so that people wouldn't think it was the old shitty stuff. Yeah. And the first customer they have, they're like, yeah, it's the same stuff. Like, just buy it, stupid.
It's the same stuff because usually people who are connoisseurs of heroin, unlike yourself, know that this is dog shit and we have to change the name or else they just won't buy it again. But yeah, I'm feeling bad for Stringer because he's also like, you know, after the death of this 9-year-old, he is telling them, like, get rid of all those guns. And they somehow fuck that up, which is like, it's not even oh, what a dumbass. They fucked it up. It's just like, what are the chances? I mean, in Baltimore Harbor, which, you know, if this season has taught us anything, it's that there are fewer and fewer ships there.
See,
they happen to land right. on the one ship that exists.
To me, this is a little bit of a plot hole in this episode, because like the cops in Baltimore that I know and love from The Wire, like if a bag fell on their fucking barge, I feel like yeah. they'd just be like, oh, look at that. Somebody threw a fucking bag on here. Like, I don't think they would immediately
hey,
be like
free guns.
Yeah, I don't think they would immediately like. So, the one thing I know about Baltimore cops from the show is that they don't like doing extra work, and I don't yeah. know if they would immediately like pick the bag up and be like, ah, oh, we got a case here.
True,
right? They'd be like, ah, right. throw it on the pile. I don't want to deal with that paperwork.
No, but in this case, because of the death of the kid, all of a sudden the police are out in force. That's why we're meeting Bunny sure. Colvin for the first time. That's why Rawls is there on the scene. He's not in his office telling people to like eat his asshole or whatever he usually does. Like, he's they've been mobilized. They're going into the hood. They're going to the into the towers and just jacking up like civilians, being like, you know.
The question is though, how does Shamrock get his name of Shamrock? Don't you want to know why he's called Shamrock?
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely he sold crack or something. Maybe he liked Lucky Charms cereal,
yeah.
so he became Shamrock. Like, there's some weird
Which
Irish
guy was
connection
that?
There.
Shamrock,
he's the lieutenant.
Yeah, oh. he's the Stringer's right. He's the one who like he's the one who planted the drugs on
okay,
Tillman.
Got it.
Yeah, I've been wondering.
He's
what
also
his...
the one.
Yeah,
he's the one who took notes in Stringer's meetings because he wanted to take minutes. And Stringer's like, "You take your minutes in a fucking drug conspiracy or whatever." Stringer
yeah.
says it's like
yeah.
Shamrock is like my favorite because
yeah.
he's like a weird side character that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
He's almost competent, and
yeah.
his name is Shamrock.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
just I want to know why.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's a good question.
He's like average corporate employee as applied to the drug gangs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%. But Stringer loves him.
Yeah.
Stringer, he goes, "Yo, Sham," and he calls him Sham.
Yeah.
And I think another interesting thing in this episode is like you have McNulty, who's English, the actor,
mm-hmm.
doing the fake English accent, and then you have Stringer, who's English. When he's talking to the crew about the bag of guns, and he's mm-hmm. like, splash. He's like, you yeah. don't hear the splash.
Splash.
And you hear the echo of the English accent,
yeah.
but it's so embedded in the Baltimore that it just flies through so perfectly.
You know, I got to say that the other thing I noticed about that very scene was its similarity to a future movie, The Departed, and I have a clip of that scene.
That's why they be paying them fucking CEOs so much damn money. I mean, everybody else could be ducking and hiding, doing what they fucking want to do. But when push comes to shove, I'm the one that's got to take that responsibility, and y'all are leaving me very, very little to work with right now.
Hold up,
sir. No, that's a very simple thing, my nigga. Very simple. You drive the guns to the water. You look around, you ain't see anybody. You throw the guns in the water.
Not where some guy from John Hancock goes every Thursday to get a fucking blowjob! Don't laugh! This ain't reality TV!
Splash!
I hate that fucking line, this ain't reality TV. What was that supposed to mean?
Oh, that line, he apparently, fun fact, he ad-libbed that line because the actor was laughing during the actual take. And so they kept it in, and it's the only thing that explains that line.
Once he reaches a certain age, you're like, just let Nicholson let do what he wants. Fun. We're not gonna give him notes.
What are we gonna do? Another take?
Right.
But yeah, I love that scene so much because he's in that position where Stringer is like having to explain. Because there's nothing, it's the middle management position is basically like, I have to yell at you, even though this is something that was an unforeseeable thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what are the chances?
I didn't
that
tell
it's
you to make
win?
Sure you hear a splash before you did it, because I too did not foresee that. It's also like a very pre-financial crisis scene where you can tell people, why do you think CEOs make so much money, and not have them immediately like push back on it.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought. It's like, that's why they be paying CEOs so much money. I was like, oh, is that why? So that they'll so if something bad
happens,
they're
so good at their jobs.
They're so good at their jobs, and because if something bad happens with the company, they will face consequences. Because that's not my experience.
Yeah, that's the opposite of what happens.
Well,
that's Stringer's aspiration.
Sure.
You know, he says it like that because he sees himself as this person who deserves everything, and he's the only person that can get them out of it. He's the only person with a brain. But if you watch this episode, having seen it, you know, 20 times or something, when he tells them to go throw, he's like, take this bag and go to the harbor. That's all he says.
Yeah.
He doesn't say throw it in the water. It's obvious, but he does not give definitive orders.
No, he's a job creator, and he wants to get some he wants to get some respect for that. God damn it.
Before we continue, it is first incumbent on me to remind everyone out there that Vince and I both have families, families who need food, families who, if they don't eat, they starve, which is why we need you to listen to these ads real quick. And I want you to really listen. Don't skip. Listen to them, because I'm sure they're great. Some of them I've heard are in Spanish. So everyone can listen and everyone can buy products. So please stick around. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites,
according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, we're back. All right, so let's talk about what is going on this episode with the detail. I really enjoyed this episode, as you could tell by the song that I did, because the detail is finally, we're getting to the point where they have to go undercover at the cat house, and it's Jimmy's time to shine. He's in a perfect position. His wife is like, nah, you know, he's finally back with his boys. And he's like, all right, guys, let's fuck. And God bless him, because he does a great job policing in this episode. I really loved it. They have to first make sure that he gets in the door. And the only way to do that is to pretend to be British, which I have a clip of.
What was your play with those girls?
Out of town salesman.
How far out of town?
What do you mean?
Well, the further out of town, the more they believe, less like a cop you sound. You do any accents? English, British, Scottish, something like that?
Crikey. I was looking to get a little hanky-panky, and this one bloke gave me this number to call when I got across the pond.
Work on it, son. Work on it.
I gotta say, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with McNulty, with Dominic West doing an American guy doing a British guy. Like, that might be some of the greatest acting I've seen on the show so far.
He is the dude disguised as the dude playing... He's the dude playing a dude disguised as another dude. That's what he is.
That's right.
But you know, English people live for American people doing English people badly.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah,
that's
yeah.
a great love of English people. So I'm sure if you grab any English person, they're going to want to do an American person doing an English person.
Yes.
But like when McNulty, though, when he called the madam at the beginning of the show, that also didn't feel very McNulty to fuck it up that badly. Mm. Like where he's like, I'm not going to tell you where I live. And and fucking Kima's like, you suck.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't think McNulty would suck that badly. That seems like a little, it didn't ring
true
but to me.
He made a good point when he said, I didn't expect to be interrogated. And I feel like that might throw him off just enough that he's like, oh, fuck, I didn't think I had to lie. I thought I just had to be horny.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. He doesn't realize that how much artifice he has to put in. He just took it for granted that he could convincingly play a guy who pays for sex. And then
easily. Right, yeah. Right.
And he's like, oh, shit. I forgot I had to lie.
Yeah, it's pretty great because, like, in that moment, there was, like, part of me that you wondered if McNulty just fucked up the whole thing. You know, and you're just like, well, there goes this. And they were able to save it just by like calling back and being like, oh, hello, I'm a different bloke. Yeah. Pay no attention to the previous phone call you just had. And yeah, he saves it. And so they get him ready. They get him in character. And one of the details that I love is they give him a man's purse.
Yes. The purse.
Yeah, I give them a nice merce because European men have purses and because they need a place to put, I guess, the bug. But I love every time Bunk sees something that's like a little feminine, he immediately likes to voice his disapproval. And I have a clip of that.
The fuck is that?
It's a man's purse. European men like yourself sometimes carry one. Hmm.
Them people ain't right over there.
Well, I don't know about that. It's a little gig. Yeah. So then McNulty gets there. They pick him up. There's all these girls out there. And he just has the greatest night of police work of his life. It is one of those scenes where you are just like, this is so... Welcome back to the police force, McNulty.
Yeah.
That I love it so much because he's I don't know what the rules are with being an undercover
cop. You're not supposed to fuck the prostitute.
That's what I thought.
It's a big no-no.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the best parts of the episode is where Jimmy's writing the thing. Yeah. And Bunk is standing behind him and he's like, "You're gonna get famous off this shit." Yeah. You're gonna go down in the legendary perverts hall of fame, is what I think he says. Yeah. And like my favorite thing though, because like you said a bunch of things right there. My favorite thing is this season McNulty tried to pull himself together to get his wife back. I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking whiskey.
I'll have a glass of wine. Yeah.
I'm on the boat. I'm not fucking anybody. Then it's like relapse extraordinaire.
Yes.
And then not as he's back with his crew as a whore, fucking whores. And him and Bunk were just great womenizers. So when Bunk gets to see Jimmy fucking two whores on the job, you see his intense jealousy, which I love so much too. He'll live.
Yeah.
He'll live.
It's like it's jealousy, and there was a little bit of pride there at one point when he goes like, "Would it be wrong if I had more than one?" And Bunk just goes, "Attaboy, Jimmy."
Attaboy, Jimmy.
Yeah.
The best.
Would it be wrong to take two?
Attaboy.
He's happy to see that his friend is recovered. I mean, you know, in the previous episode, you know, it's probably the first time he's ever seen Jimmy cry when Jimmy is like, you know, if I don't have the job, then I have nothing. So he's happy that Jimmy is... not going to kill himself. But then big mistake is made. And I think it's one of the stupid mistakes of it's something that you see a lot with that's happening in the detail where people keep forgetting that the only reason this detail exists is because Valchek wants to punish Frank Sobotka for putting in the stained glass window.
It's a classic Pollock pissing contest, as the New York Post would say.
Yeah. Yes.
And they're losing sight of that. And I mean, if you're going to be taking this whole detail on under this like guise, like then you have to at least placate the boss. You have to make him feel like, oh yeah, Frank is definitely a top target, but also, you know, like we're building this case on Frank. You just lie to him. And instead of lying to him, like I guess Rhonda didn't get the memo or what, but Rhonda just tells him that it's bigger than Frank Sobotka, and Valchek is pissed about it. And I have a clip of that.
What about Frank Sobotka? This is about Frank Sobotka.
The case is bigger now.
Look, Missy, do you have charges on Frank Sobotka?
Charging Sobotka at this point would lose us the wire and a chance at the real targets.
He is the real target.
I'm sure if they bring him
the
case.
You owe me on this, Irv. Sabat.
You asked for a detail. I gave you a detail. You asked for that. I gave you that.
Frank Sabat. Fucking rat fuckers, all of you. This is my case. Mine. And now you're going to tell me who the target is? Sabat.
I love Perlman's face in that scene, because it's like she's used to a professional world where people are not allowed to speak to each other in this way. And the police department is really like this boys club. And anytime you get a profession that is like almost completely dominated by men, like they speak to each other in ways that is not really allowed in other professions, and you can just see
HR
that,
nightmare.
Yeah, you can see that on her face the whole time. Like, wow, he just came in here and he told you to get fucked. We usually have to like euphemize that a little bit where I come from.
Yeah,
but I think that's because Valchek is not respectable, and even when Frank Sabatka says to Valchek, I remember when you were annoying the girls at the CYO dances.
Yeah.
Like he says to, we know Frank or Valchek is a loser.
Yeah.
And they disrespect him over and over and over again. Is that actor really an actor or is he a Baltimore guy? He's so
he's
good.
Kind of Valchek. He's like from, I forget, Philadelphia, I want to say. He's from nearby, but yeah, he's sort of an actor, but yeah, mainly he's like, he's very authentic and that's why
Al
he got,
Brown. Yeah. Yeah. Brown. And he just passed away recently, which is unfortunate because we would have loved to have him on the pod talking about Frank Sabatka. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but yeah, he is. I do actually think that he is a real actor because he's impressive on the show. He's like so fucking good. Funny. He's so like perfect at playing this part, which is it's a really hard part to play because you have to be a petty piece of shit, and you have to like look small while thinking you're big. Like he's built perfectly
yeah,
for
he
this
looks
role.
Like a little mongoose. It's amazing. Brown was a 29 year Air Force veteran who served two tours in Vietnam. He didn't get into acting until his 50s, with his first role coming on an episode of Homicide: Life on the Street in 1995.
Wow.
He's perfectly cast.
Yeah.
He's perfect. He's so good in this role. And he's just like so good at being just this like little Weasley piece of shit. And this petty fucking Polish dude. I love him so much. And they fucked it up. You know, just tell him. Oh, yeah. Frank, he's the target. Don't worry about that. We'll get to that. Unfortunately, he does not, there will be some consequences for that.
I feel like it's all because he's not respectable. Yes. Like they just look right past him. And also the other case is so major and his shit is so petty that they're going to dismiss it.
Well, he doesn't.
Yeah. That's just how they have to do it.
He doesn't have the guile that like Prop Joe has where he can, couch his things that benefit him in advice for other people. Like Valchek doesn't have that gear. Like he's just a petty man, and everybody understands it. But he also doesn't really face any consequences for it because you know he did a good job at climbing the career ladder.
That's right. All right, so now we have to get on to the last bit of plot in this episode. We're talking about Nikki and Ziggy and Frank. Mm. What's going on with that? This is exciting.
Can I just say that it's very sad that Ziggy's duck only lasted like an episode and a half. I could have used like at least three more episodes of Ziggy and the duck.
I know.
At least one other duck.
What's that?
At least just one more. Yeah. One more. Ziggy, I'm telling you, before we even get on to this, Sabatka, like Chris Bauer, who plays Frank Sabatka.
Yeah.
Perfect. Like, this is the best thing I've ever seen him in. The guy who plays Ziggy, it's just so good. The guy who plays Nick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The guy who plays. But these characters, where they're so flawed and so fucked, they just shine like diamonds.
I agree completely. Vince Mancini, on the other hand.
I think they're great in this episode. I think this is like the best both of them have ever.
Who don't you like? Vince, who don't you like?
He doesn't like Nikki or Ziggy.
I don't. Well, Ziggy is tough because Ziggy's just a very like bizarre character in general. I think that there's pushback on him because he's the annoying guy. And he's also like this sort of unicorn character that we don't like recognize as a type necessarily. Nick, I don't know. He just like, there's just times when he's yelling at Ziggy where he feels very, like after school special. But yeah,
I think he's
in
wonderful.
This episode, I thought they were both great.
Yeah. And
I love Nick when he takes over the drug game and he's talking to Frog in the street about like what white people are and what black people are.
Yeah.
And Ziggy is such a classic loser who suffered from nepotism, who happens to have this gigantic penis. He's just a great conundrum. He's the ultimate conundrum.
Yeah. Yes,
and
he is.
And he's such a fuck up, and he's been disrespected for so long that he's trying all these different things to get his respect, and he just can't get it. And I find him to be incredibly tragic, Ziggy.
Oh, for sure, he's tragic. And I, you know, where I land on this is that I don't consider either of their performances, Nikki or Ziggy, to be bad, because I don't see them as actors playing these parts. I see them as them. And so of that, the issue that I have is that the characters themselves are so flawed that sometimes they piss me off. Like, you know, Ziggy is such a wild card, such an agent of chaos, that sometimes you want to yell at him.
Always.
But Vince, you made a very good point, I think, on the last episode, which was that Ziggy is exactly like where he needs to be, like where he belongs, where he shines is in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yes.
And this scene is no different. This episode is no different in that, like, there's a scene where New Charles finally comes back after having his leg crushed and cut off.
Fuck if I wouldn't give my right leg for a shot and a beer.
New Charles in the house.
What's with the duck? Hey, Zig.
Charlie.
Thing is, you know you gotta let go of your name.
Say what?
Yeah, New Charles don't work no more for a one-legged fuck.
Yeah, maybe stump. New Peggy.
Hey, how about tilt?
Tilt? I like that.
Tilt.
And Ziggy is just, he's there with his duck. He's having a good time. People are laughing, like they love it. They love Ziggy coming in with his duck.
I think a big part of his character is he wants to have the social status that he has in the bar everywhere else, and he can't figure out how to apply the things that make him like a great barfly, to, you know, like a career or having a purpose in life.
Yeah, and it's
Ziggy
so
is a classic alcoholic. He's a classic pre-sobriety alcoholic in every sense of the word.
Yeah, yeah, and like. Him, you know, the fact that you wonder what his motivations are throughout the season, because you're just like, okay, it's not about the money. It's not, I guess it's also about respect, but also like why is he getting a duck? And you realize, like, when his father asks him, like, what are you about? And he's, you know, like, what were you doing burning that $100 bill to smoke a cigarette? And he goes, oh, it's just a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, like, oh, that's like, he just wants to be a fun guy at the bar. Like, that's all he wants. That's why he will spend his money on buying a duck and then giving it a diamond collar. Mm-hmm. Like,
because that would be funny to the people at the bar. And it was.
Yeah. Cause wouldn't it be sick if I had a duck? What a diamond. Like that's the whole thing. The problem is that he's surrounded by people who don't necessarily have his best intentions at heart, nor his ducks, and that all catches up to him, and I have a clip.
Hey Zig, your duck won't touch that Pikesville, right?
He drinks mid shelf. He don't like that rail shit.
Hey fuck nuts. What the fuck is wrong with you?
What's up with my cousin?
Don't even talk to me about that asshole.
Drank himself to death.
Oh, shit. What kind of fool would give a duck whiskey anyhow?
That boy, right?
This fucking bird couldn't hold liquor for shit.
Now, these are guys who have been egging on his duck drinking. They've been... They've wanted him to drink all the whiskey, the top shelf, the bottom shelf, the mid shelf. And then when it dies, they're just like, what's wrong with this fucking kid?
Like, no one wants the funny guy at the bar to actually get his life together. The whole reason he's a fun guy at the bar is because he doesn't have his life together.
Yes. Yeah, I know. But it's
the real reason he's a fun guy at the bar is because he makes the rest of them look good.
Yes.
Because he's the biggest fuck up at the bar. And when he really fucks up, they turn on him. Fucking Dolores, that asshole. After she's buying the whole bar, fucking drinks from him. She like raised Ziggy. You know, she like used to give him snacks after school. And now she's like, that asshole. And she knows him better than anybody. I feel like they really turn on Ziggy. Ziggy breaks my fucking heart. When you say, what are you about? And he says, a smile. Mm-hmm. That's some fucking desperately sad shit. It breaks my heart.
It's incredibly sad. And it's like, you just see the tragedy of Ziggy Sobotka unfolding in this episode, and there's hints of where it's all going. So he is simultaneously creating this plan with Johnny 50 to steal some cars and sell them to Double G, who also bought the cameras. But he's doing it on his own. He is no Nikki involved. It's just going to be him and Johnny 50 and Double G. And you can see that trouble is a brewing, because number one, Double G thinks you're a fucking idiot. Mm-hmm. And if you don't think this guy is going to try to fuck you over somehow, you are a fucking idiot. But then when he's after his duck dies, he's at the pawn shop and he's selling the diamond collar. And the guy goes, "You put this on a duck?" And he goes, "Of course."
"You hung this on a duck?"
"Of course."
But then he's like looking at a gun in a glass casing, and you're like, "Oh, this bad. This is gonna go.
That's not gonna go well.
Terribly, terribly wrong." Because again, you know, Nikki or Ziggy's whole thing has been, you know, his biggest problem has been he wants to do all this gangster shit. He wants respect, but he has no muscle. He has no like people backing him up. Even his cousin is just like, "Just don't get involved, man. I don't want to have to defend you. It's like, it's not worth it to be in a gang with you if you're always going to get in trouble with people, you know?" And so Ziggy is realizing that one of the answers to his not having a muscle problem is going to be owning a gun. And that's not going to go well.
I like when he's talking about how they're going to put the wood out there to drive the cars off the lot. And the other guy's like, "Why the Mercedes? Can we just drive them this way?" And he's like, "Why don't we do that?" And he's like, "Because that's not the plan."
Yeah, that ain't the plan.
Yeah, he's...
that ain't the plan. But his plan is good.
Yeah, his plan is geared around having like a cool story to tell more than anything else. And he doesn't want someone to like come in and make it less less cinematic.
No. His plan is to make it so it's not looking like the dock workers did it. That was his plan. So it looked like an outside job. That was the whole plan.
All right.
That's why he's doing it. Him not explaining that, I think, definitely makes it a little bit more confusing. But yes, that's right. He is trying to make it not look like he's the one who did it. That's why they're going to be smashing the sunroofs of these things, too, and getting some glass on the floor, making it look like a smash grab job by some outside force.
Meanwhile, Nikki, you know, he's got to go have this thing with White Mike. And it really shows the variety of white guys with tattoos on the back of their necks in Baltimore at the time.
That was the lower back tramp stamp for men of the early 2000s.
Yes. Yeah.
It was just like, you know, it'd be cool. Fucking a triple X tattoo on the back of my neck. And it's like, no, it wouldn't be cool.
Doesn't Nikki has the pie symbol, right? Yeah. He's like a math genius in high school.
He has the pie
Nikki
symbol.
Pies of vodka. Yeah.
How the gang gets caught in the town is Jeremy Renner's character has a fucking shamrock on the back of his neck that he can't cover up when they're doing a job.
Ugh, just an embarrassing tattoo choice. I mean, it's like, I think we're probably all going to look back at like this era of tattoos and be like, well, I guess face tattoos were worse, but at least face tattoos have some balls. Mm. You know what I mean? Like that's like, there's balls there. It's really, you're saying, fuck you, society.
Yeah. I'm never going to get a real job.
I'm never getting a real job. I am only ever going to be a rapper. And like, you know, it's a gamble, but sometimes it pays off, you know, vis-a-vis Post Malone. But sometimes it doesn't.
Fast forward 20 years where somebody with a face tattoo is checking you out of Stop and Shop. You know? Yeah. He made the move, but you had to hire him eventually. He had to get the job.
Once you get into your post-Post Malone phase, that's going to be trouble.
Oh, stupid.
Very good.
But just to round this all out, Nikki, yeah, he meets with White Mike, and then talks to Sergey and about a murder, and Sergey points out that, if he had hands and a face, then it wasn't us, which is going to come back around later.
Sergey, what up, dog? I got a friend of yours here said we're giving G's a 4. Yeah? All right, fuck it. Yeah, it's fine. Yo, another thing. I want to know it wasn't your people dropped that body over on Poteet Street the other night, you know? Did he have hands? Did he have a face? Yes? Then it wasn't us. Idiot.
We also find out that the Greek has an inside man in the fucking FBI.
Yeah, who's this crooked ass San Diego guy?
Yeah, dude. What was his name? Like Agent Cloudus or something.
Gleekus.
Gleekus. No. Gleekus, yeah. is double G. Yeah,
It's another Greek name.
Though. Yeah, it's another Greek name. Koutras.
Koutras.
Ernest Koutras, who, after getting a call from Fitz, immediately warns the Greek, and
the Greek,
in return, gets Koutras some dirt on the Colombians, who fucked the Greeks over this like deal for chemicals. And basically it's just like a little bit, you see a little bit of the gangster shit happening. And one of the things I like about The Wire is that they could easily just make it a show about cool ethnic whites sitting at a table, Soprano style, you know, and just being like, we're doing it. We got to fight the Colombians because the FBI. But instead, it's mostly just about how Irish people are deeply flawed. I'm just kidding. It was like a cool little insight into what a show about the Greek would be, with them having the like sitting around and eating and talking about, you know, fucking
listening
over
to Greek music and
listening
stuff.
To Greek music, fucking over the Colombians, all that stuff. That is what happened in the episode. Is there favorite scene, least favorite scene, or scene that we missed? Anyone have something we missed that they love?
The coke as paint was cool. You know,
yeah,
like that he's looking for the coke, and it turns out that the whole pigments was the coke. That was fun.
No, that was great.
You know,
god damn. Oh, wouldn't that be? Anyways, I mean, you know, listen, coke was never my thing, but there's always been the dream in the back of my head has always been like one day you like run into a Walgreens truck that fell down, and it's just all of the morphine is there, and you just go,
When Charlie on Lost finds the heroin, yes, and all the, that's my dream. That was my ultimate dream. But my favorite scene of this whole episode is where he says that fucking bird couldn't hold liquor for shit.
Yeah.
That's by far my favorite moment.
It's perfect. So if I had to rate this episode with a letter grade, and I do, I think I would give it a solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to rate it?
Oh, tough one. But yeah, I'm going to go solid B+ also.
All right. And Dave, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, let's say between B+ and B+, what would you give it?
Well, it's funny you should ask me that, because I would totally have given it a B+ even without those parameters. Mm.
All right. Well, it looks like it's a B+ episode of The Wire and an A+ episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. David Manheim, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it was a pleasure. So much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find you?
Oh, just if you're interested in drugs, addiction, and dumb shit, just Google Dopey Podcast and you'll find me.
Absolutely. Check it out. Dopey Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Once again, Dave, thank you again so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was so fun.
Hell yeah.
There we go.
All right. Patreon.com/Frogcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we have 4 shout outs this week.
I'm ready.
These are 4 people that you need to give a street name to.
These are all going to be fire. I'm just warning you.
Oh, yeah, I'm very excited for them. I'm sure they will be great. One of them is someone who mentioned in a comment that they paid $8 and I think they said they didn't get a nickname, and it might have been because they were because we were afraid of how to pronounce their name, because their name is Mike Nickus. And I think I'm not sure but I think what they were saying is it sounds like my n-word. I don't know, but I was just like, okay, we'll give you the name, but we're not going to give you that one. But yes, Mike Nickus.
Yeah, we call this guy the Greek, a.k.a. 5 Cent.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. I like it. Okay, next is Baltimore Matt. That's the name already.
Yeah, this guy's already got a nickname, but I'm just going to pretend he's just a guy named Matt from Baltimore. We're going to call him Krabby. He's always... he's fishing out there in the Chesapeake.
Okay, I like it. Next is Kit Roosh.
Knight Rider, easy.
Easy, that's beautiful. And finally, Daniel Arthur.
A lot of ways to go with this one. I'm going to call this guy Excalibur, because that's the sword that he wields. King Arthur, yeah.
I like it. I like it. Those are
taking it back to the round table.
Weirdly enough, those are all actually fire nicknames. Facetiously.
I called my shot like Babe Ruth.
You did.
Pointed over the center field wall, and I hit dingers.
Yeah. Did he ever like call a shot and was just like, and it's going to hit that woman's titties? He seems like he would say that.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. Well, anyways, patreon.com/frogcast, $8 tier. Get your shout out immediately, or just, you know, subscribe so that you can get your weekly Frogcast episode where me and Vince talk about other things like movies and the internet and junk.
You should look up what Babe Ruth's nickname was before it was Babe. And then you're like, well, now I understand why he went by Babe.
Wait, why? What was it? Hold on. Babe, you want me to look it up? I'm going
to
look it up.
I mean,
Babe Ruth.
You can do it now or on your own time. Either way, you can.
No,
just
I'm doing it. First
react
nickname.
React to it live. I like it.
Okay. First nickname. Dunn's baby.
No.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
Hold on. I'll send it to you.
The Bambino, Sultan of SWAT. I know these. You're sending it to me.
Uh huh.
Is it in the chat? Oh, no. Oh, there we go. Okay. So, we're going to just real quick. Today, learn. Oh, no. God damn it.
They were not very PC back in the.
Holy
in the
shit.
Teens.
They called him a slur regarding his lips. I'm glad it turned into Babe, although it would be very interesting to have a candy bar out there called this. But everyone on your own, Google it and, have fun. Frogcasts@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030. We really got to do that mailbag episode soon.
Yes. Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, please send in your mailbags now, because in the next couple of weeks, we will be doing a mailbag episode. Frogcasts@gmail.com. Send your questions, send your comments, and your concerns, or leave that voicemail, ask whatever question. Whatever you want to say, send it. Ask some questions. We'll answer it.
You can email us at frogcast@gmail.com and send us like a voice memo if that's easy.
Yeah. Please feel free to do that, because the mailbag episode's coming up and it's going to be great. All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss. All right. I'm going to warn you right up top. There's a lot of autotune, okay? I have a short amount of time to do these things, and I don't have time for a million takes, so, yeah.
Jim McNulty, oh, the time has come. And you know that you want more than one lady. Okay. It's only fair because your wife left you. You answered your catchphrase, what the fuck did I do? You did too.
Two ladies.
heart. This song rocks so fucking hard. This is a good ass song, bro. Hell yeah. You're motorboating, ladies of the night. You're pretending to fight. You'll be spot on tonight. Rhythm is all was sent by Avon, and the stringer's gonna have to make him gone today. Quietly. Biggie Sabatka's drinking duck has died. He steals some cars to make cash on the side for him, not his cousin.
My name is L.A. Matt. Okay, wait a second. I have some questions. Is this a Christian song? I know it's called Sister Christian, and maybe this should be obvious that it's a Christian song, but for a long time, I thought it was just about fucking. It seems like a song about fucking. But I was reading the lyrics to do this, and I was like, wait a second, is this about chastity? What the fuck? Weird. Okay.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.